Hello and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to talk about water in the atmosphere and address the differences between dew and frost. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the first half of Chapter 4 from the Aaron's text. Last lecture, we talked about applications of temperature data. Temperature is the most common weather variable that people talk about. The second most common deals with water. People wonder how much rain or snow there will be, why it's foggy, or notice a thin sheen of frost on their windows or cars in the morning. Today, we're going to talk about water and how it moves through the atmosphere. First, I'd like to talk a bit about why water is so special. Water gives us life and so much more. It has special properties, such as being able to change from solid to liquid to gas easily at standard Earth's surface temperatures and pressures. Another property, which will become more important in later lectures, is that ice, the solid form of water, is less dense than liquid, and so it floats. You can think of ice cubes, icebergs, and ice caps as an example of that property. Water also has an unusually high heat capacity and a specific heat that is 3 times that of land. The heat capacity is the ratio of the heat absorbed or released by a system to the corresponding temperature rise or fall. We talked about specific heat a few lectures ago, but it's worth reviewing the definition. Specific heat is defined as the ratio of the heat absorbed or released by the unit mass of the system to the corresponding temperature rise or fall. Both of these together describe how energy is related to water in the Earth's system. Water is everywhere in the Earth system, but not necessarily in a form that is useful to humans, livestock, or crops. We find water in oceans, glaciers, rivers, lakes, the air, soil, and even living tissue. The oceans account for about 97% of the water on Earth. This is salty and not readily usable by humans or plants. The ice sheets in Antarctica and Greenland account for most of the other 3%. And they are in freshwater form. The atmosphere has only a very little amount of water in it, as little as 0.001%. Many folks have learned about the Earth's water cycle, which is also known as the hydrologic cycle, in classes when they were younger in, say, grammar school or middle school. There are many aspects of this cycle, and we're going to focus only on 6 of them: evaporation, condensation, precipitation, transpiration, sublimation, and deposition. Let's start with evaporation. Evaporation is the process by which a liquid is transformed into a gas. Evaporation happens over oceans, lakes, rivers, and other standing bodies of water. Evaporation is powered by the sun. Solar radiation heats up the water molecules until they are energetic enough to free themselves from the liquid state. Thus, evaporation requires energy and heat is absorbed. Condensation is the change from a gas to a liquid. It is responsible for the formation of clouds. Condensation releases energy into the environment, thus heat is released as condensation occurs. This will become very important for our discussions of cloud formation, mid-latitude cyclones, thunderstorms, and even hurricanes. Precipitation is any falling liquid or solid water in the atmosphere. The old term is hydrometeor, and is where the term meteorology is thought to have come from. Precipitation is balanced by evaporation. The average annual precipitation has to equal evaporation, otherwise the oceans would dry up or there would be no water in the atmosphere. Precipitation happens over both land and water, and in essence returns water to oceans and other bodies of water, or is absorbed by the ground and turned into groundwater. Transpiration is the release of water vapor to the atmosphere by plants. Plants uptake water through their roots, and that water fell as precipitation at some previous point in time. Though important, it is not as important as evaporation for our studies of introductory meteorology. You might ask, how do these processes compare between land and water surfaces? Well, over water, evaporation is more common than precipitation. And over the ocean, since there are no plants, we don't consider transpiration. Conversely, precipitation exceeds evaporation on land, and condensation happens everywhere. Let's talk about the final two, sublimation and deposition. These two are less commonly experienced than the rest. Sublimation is the conversion of a solid directly to a gas. You can visualize the rapid conversion of dry ice into a gas. It's commonly used for Halloween decorations to make it look like a pot is smoking. A good example of sublimation happening in the atmosphere is the gradual shrinking of unused ice cubes in your freezer, or snow piles disappearing even though the outside air temperature doesn't go above freezing. Sublimation requires energy. Deposition, on the other hand, releases energy and is the conversion of a gas directly to a solid. Examples include frost formation on a window pane, known as white frost or hoarfrost, and a freezer building up thick ice over time. For the freezer, the ice that builds up was likely part of an ice cube that sublimated. Deposition of a gas to a solid happens without going through an intermediate liquid phase. Now that we have a solid understanding of the hydrologic cycle, let's talk about how we quantify the amount of water vapor present in the atmosphere. We're going to talk about humidity, absolute humidity, mixing ratio, vapor pressure, relative humidity, and dew point. First, what is humidity? Humidity is the general term that refers to the air's water vapor content. We can talk about different types of humidity. Absolute humidity, for instance, is defined as the mass of water vapor in a given volume of air. It represents the density of water vapor in the air. Changes in air pressure and temperature change the volume of air, even if the amount of water doesn't change. We can think of the absolute humidity as the mass of water vapor in grams divided by the volume of air in cubic meters, making the unit for absolute humidity grams per cubic meter. We can also talk about something called the mixing ratio. The mixing ratio is the mass of water vapor in a given volume of air to the mass of dry air. This is not affected by changes in temperature and pressure because the mass doesn't change as a function of temperature, just the volume. We can think of the mixing ratio as the mass of water vapor in grams divided by the mass of dry air in kilograms, making the unit for mixing ratio grams per kilogram. Our next concept is vapor pressure. We're not going to go into too much detail, however, there are a few facts you need to know. The vapor pressure of water vapor is that part of the total atmospheric pressure that is attributable to its water vapor content. So, if we add more water vapor to dry air, the vapor pressure due to water vapor would go up. Vapor pressure is important for understanding saturation. Saturation of air is an atmospheric condition whereby the level of water vapor is the maximum possible at the existing temperature and pressure. If we consider two containers, one sealed and one open, filled partially with water, we can see how the amount of water vapor and thus the vapor pressure changes over time. In both containers, initially more molecules leave the surface of the water than return. This continues for the open container until all the water is gone. Over time, in the sealed container, the number of molecules leaving the surface will equal the number of molecules returning to the surface. When this happens, you have reached saturation. When air is saturated, the pressure exerted by the motion of the water vapor molecules is called the saturation vapor pressure, or SVP. The SVP varies as a function of temperature. You can have a higher SVP, or more water vapor, in warmer air. You may be thinking this is great, but that's in a sealed container. How do we reach saturation in the real atmosphere? Well, in the real atmosphere, gravity acts as the lid, keeping the water vapor in, like in our jar example. The atmosphere isn't always perfectly balanced at every second, because that's reality, it's not perfect. We have what is called net evaporation when more water is leaving a surface, and net condensation when more water is returning to the surface. At saturation, net evaporation equals net condensation. Now that we have an idea of saturation and SVP, we can talk about relative humidity. Relative humidity is the most common form we see when considering daily or general public discussions of water vapor content in the air. Relative humidity is the ratio of the air's actual water vapor content compared with the amount of water vapor required for saturation at that temperature and pressure. Therefore, relative humidity is simply the water vapor content divided by the water vapor capacity and is reported typically in percent. You can also think of relative humidity as the actual vapor pressure divided by the saturation vapor pressure multiplied by 100 to get that percent. relative humidity changes with temperature can vary quite a bit. There are daily changes in temperature, such as daylight versus nighttime temperatures. When temperatures are low, relative humidity tends to be high, and during the day when temperatures are high, relative humidity tends to be low. Other ways to modify RH include temperature changes that result as air moves horizontally from one location to another, and temperature changes caused as air moves vertically in the atmosphere. Relative humidity tells us how close to saturation the air is, not how much water vapor is actually in the air. Our final discussion topic today will be dew and frost. You may have heard of the dew point temperature. This is the temperature at which air needs to be cooled to reach saturation. This is essentially a relative humidity of 100%. It is a measure of the actual moisture content of a parcel of air. The term dew point stems from the fact that during the night, objects at the surface often cool below the dew point are coated with dew. When the dew point exceeds about 65 degrees Fahrenheit, it is considered humid by most people. A dew point above 75 degrees Fahrenheit is considered unbearable. Dew is the condensation of water vapor on objects that have cooled to the dew point. These objects radiated away some of their heat, so may be cooler than the surrounding air. For example, a car will get dew before the cement nearby since they cool at different rates, and metal is a good conductor and releases more energy overnight than the cement does. We see dew most frequently on grass since plants transpire and release water vapor right near their grass blades. Frost may at first seem like frozen dew. That is not the case. Frost forms from deposition, where water vapor is converted directly to ice. It is often called white frost or hoar frost. Frost is beautiful and can produce crystalline images on window panes that look like works of art. That finishes up our discussion of water in the atmosphere, the hydrologic cycle, and ways to evaluate the water content of the atmosphere. Join us next time for a discussion on cloud formation and cloud identification. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!